6 attack. Cheney said the messages leave no doubt that the White House knew exactly what was happening at the Capitol. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 57 degrees and sunny. In New York City, it's a little colder at 52 degrees, but also sunny. For WPFW in Washington and WBIA in New York, I'm Amara Evering.
The time now is let's start that all over. The time now is 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi here on WBAI, not WBIA, WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. You can't make this stuff up. Stay tuned.
Greetings, greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show on WBI 99.5 FM radio and WBI.org. I am your host, Milton Alamadi. Welcome to your favorite Pan-African news show, where we discuss the ongoing new scramble for Africa and Africa's resources. We deconstruct, we analyze, we on the continent. So, for example, when we hear rampant coups going on in African countries, we explain that this is not just an quote-unquote African event. We show you the foreign interest involved in these coups, and we'll get into that a little later. And we also do domestic news, actually. We do local right here in New York. Because one of the things we focus is on investigative stuff. And today we have a guest that is going to help us explain what is going on at the Department of Correction, New York City Department of Correction. We have a correction officer, Sean Dixon. He's been there for 15 years. And when you listen to him speak today, you will understand why morale is so low among so many correction officers. This is a victim who was injured on the job by an inmate, and now he's being treated as if he's a criminal by the Department of Correction. But we'll get into that a little later. But listeners, I want to first talk about a serious matter before I get into my guest, Sean Dixon. I want to remind you that we won't be able to bring you any of this programming without your support. And we certainly cannot do it without our transmitter. And that is why I want to talk a little bit about the Tower Fund. We're trying to mobilize resources. We know you've always, and now we're coming to you again. We pay for the transmitter at 4 Times Square, and it's $17,000 a month. That means you're talking $204,000 per year. And we're coming to you to help us pay off next year on a good footing. And you can help us by pledging to the Tower Fund. You can do that in two ways. You can go to Tower Fund, that's TOWERFUND.WBAI.org, or you can dial 212-209-2950 for the Tower Fund. We don't take your generosity for granted. I certainly do not. I feel it's a great privilege to have a show, on WBAI. Where else can you hear the kind of discussions that we have on Black Star News Show? Where else would you be able to hear us discuss the assassins of Thomas Sankara, the great late revolutionary leader of Burkina Faso, who was able to transform in his country in the period that he was in power? Some have not been able to accomplish in decades of power. We need more leaders on the continent like Thomas Sankara. Sankara learned, of course, and was inspired by people that came before him. African revolutionaries like Kwame Nkrumah, who wanted Africa to industrialize, use Africa's resources to develop Africa. People like Patrice Lumumba, brutally assassinated by the Belgians, by the United States, by Britain. Why? Because he wanted Congo for the Congolese and Congo's resources to be for the Congolese. These were the leaders of the 60s, and they inspired leaders who came later, like Thomas Sankara. Cut down, brutally killed. Sankara actually predicted his death. When he addressed the gathering of the Organization of African Unity in Addis Ababa in 1987, and he told fellow African leaders, he said, listen, we need to speak with one voice. Let's go to the West and say, you must eliminate this debt burden, the billions of dollars that prevent us from building our country, improving the lives of our people. But we must do it collectively. If I go alone, as Thomas Sankara, leader of Burkina Faso, I will not be alive to attend next year's meeting of the Organization of African Unity. That was July 1987. And he said it explicitly. And anybody that wants to listen to that speech, go to YouTube, do the research. Thomas Sankara speech at OAU 1987. And that video will come up. I will not be alive next year if I go alone. But they cannot assassinate all of us, more than 50 African presidents. No, they can't kill us all. So we must speak with one voice. In October, Sankara was dead. He knew what he was talking about. He knows the danger for an African who actually wants Africa's resources to benefit Africa. So that's why we constantly discuss Thomas Sankara on Black Star News Show, because we have many listeners here and overseas. We have listeners in Europe. We have listeners in Africa. We want to keep encouraging the would-be Thomas Sankaras to reemerge, to lead Africa in the right direction. But where else in New York City could I have the privilege to talk freely with you and share these views, except on Black Star News Show on WBAI. So that's what I mean when I say I feel privileged, I feel blessed, but it does not happen accidentally. It happens with your support. So when we come back to you again and again, I really hope you don't feel that it's tiring. We prefer not to, but this is listener supported. We don't depend on any commercials. We don't depend on any commercials, and that is why we can talk about Thomas Sankara, Patrice Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, Nelson Mandela, Steve Biko, all these great Pan-African revolutionary leaders. please. 212-209-2950 to support the Tower Fund, or you can go online. Tower Fund, TowerFund.wbai.org. I mentioned earlier the recent spate of coups in African countries, in Guinea, in Chad, in Mali. What do they have in common? All are former French colonies. And what is really happening in these countries? Let's start with Mali, for example. First with Mali, because that's where we had the coup first in August 2020. Prior to the coup, trades unions, students, workers, ordinary merchants had been coming out on the streets demanding a government that is inclusive of all these groups, tired of elitism rule, which is what we have in African countries. We have many African rulers ruling Africa on behalf of European and American interest. You know, the Europeans, Americans, very clever. After they saw emerging nationalist Pan-Africans like Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba in the 60s, they said, no, the issue is, of course, we cannot have European governors anymore in African countries. But we can find Africans with European minds, puppets. So let's put them in charge. That's how you have people like Mobutu being in power 37 years. Think about that. The most anti-African ruler, embezzled $5 billion, supported and sustained by the United States. Every time there was a revolutionary uprising, when insurgents wanted to overthrow him, the U.S. would rush with U.S. cargo planes using Moroccan troops, paratroopers, to suppress any attempt to get rid of Mobutu. And I say all this because there's a lot of discontent. The young want a new Africa. They want the Africa that was envisioned by people like Patrice Lumumba, people like Kwame Nkrumah, people like Thomas Sankara. That is the Africa they want. That's why they've been coming out to the streets in Mali, in Chad, in Guinea. And then suddenly you have coups in these countries. At the time that you see the upsurge in these protests, building toward perhaps popular revolutions. So these coups are actually attempts to interfere with the organic social uprising that are occurring in these countries. And the generals who carry out these coups, who do they report to? They report to France. Look at the best example was in Chad, when the dictator of three decades, Deby, was assassinated. Their constitution calls for the Speaker of the Parliament to succeed into the presidency and hold elections in 3 months. And the people, the young people in Chad who had been coming out to the streets were encouraged. But then what happened? Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, flew to Chad and sat next to the son of the assassinated dictator. The son, Mahamat Deby, succeeded his father as the new dictator. So Emmanuel Macron, president of France, was there to tear up the constitution of Chad and say, forget your constitution. Your next president is going to be anointed by the president of France. And why does France do all this? To protect the resources, of course. France And here, it reminds me of this thing. A journalist asked Emmanuel Macron a few years ago. He said, given all the crises that we're having in many of the West African countries, would France support a Marshall Plan type support for African countries? And what did Emmanuel Macron say? He said, in Africa, it's not about resources. The problem is women are having too many children. This is from Macron, not from the right-wing fascist candidate that he's running against right now in France. This is supposedly the progressive, enlightened individual. Had I been that reporter who had asked that question, my comeback would have been, you know what? Had hundreds of thousands of African soldiers not fought on behalf of France in World War II and World War I, you could possibly be speaking German today. That's what I would have said, because that really enraged me when I heard what he said. So France is now preempting popular revolutions in African countries. Where else can you hear this analysis, this explanation, but on Black Star News Show? And as I said earlier, I do not take this for granted. We're here because of your support. That is how we're able to have a show like Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBI.org. So, listeners, if you do see value in some of the things I have been saying, do support us with the Tower Fund campaign. As I said earlier, we pay $17,000 a month for our transmitters on 4 Times Square. And we're trying to raise funds to cover that so that we're not constantly behind the curve. I don't know if any of you have seen the general manager lately, but every time I see him, he has less hair. I don't even know if this man sleeps. So we're doing our part to try to alleviate his worries as well. Please go online to Tower Fund, that's towerfund.wbai.org, or you can also call 212-209-2950. This is the station where you can hear the analysis and interpretation of what is going on in the African continent. We have the modern contemporary version of the scramble for Africa. When Europeans met at the Berlin Conference in 1884 and divided the African continent, they said, if we are going to steal, let's steal like gentlemen. England, you get this. France, you get this. Portugal, you get this. Spain, you get this. Germany, you get this. Italy, you get this. They divided the entire continent. Now they don't need to do it physically. Now they have these generals who are trying to hijack revolutions, doing it in the interest of empire. And as I said earlier, they would sustain as long as possible a corrupt leader like Mobutu in Zaire. And the modern version of Mobutu is the dictator in Uganda, General Yoweri Museveni, sustained by about $1 billion annually in U.S. taxpayer money with weapons and arms. He's been there since Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. Without U.S. taxpayer dollars, this dictator would not survive for 35 years, committing brutality not only against Uganda, but has invaded Rwanda. Many people forget, had Uganda not invaded Rwanda in 1990, the genocide of 1994 never would have occurred. invaded Congo multiple times, leading to the deaths of millions of Congolese. Invaded South Sudan. And this is the guy supported by U.S. taxpayer dollars. Listeners, before I bring on our guest, Sean Dixon of the Department of Correction, I also want to remind you of another domestic story that we focused on recently. Biased judges in the New York court system, New York State Supreme Court. Recently, we discussed the case of a judge, Margaret McGowan, who does not rule based on the facts. And I know that many such victims are out there of biased judges. Get in touch with us. We'll do your story. My email is malimadi@gmail.com. That's malimadi@gmail.com. I'm glad you listened to that story that we did about the judges and you went to change.org as we encourage you and you signed the petition. And now we have more than 500 people who signed that petition calling for the removal of this judge, Margaret McGowan, calling for the governor and the legislator in Albany to remove this judge and many such other judges. And anybody who still wants to sign that petition, just go to change.org and put her name in the search engine. Margaret, of course, you know how to spell. McGowan is M-C-G-O-W-A-N. Sign that petition. Read it first. I don't want people to sign things they don't support. Read the petition. If you agree with it, then sign it, then share that petition. Once again, before I bring our guest, I'm asking for your support for the Tao Fund. You can do so by dialing 212-209-2950, or you can pledge online going to Tower Fund, and that's TOWERFUND.WBAI.org. And the tower refers to the towers at Four Times Square that host our transmitters, without which we would not be able to bring you any of this programming. Our guest has been waiting patiently, Sean Dixon. Welcome to Black Star News Show. Please
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me. Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Very good. Welcome to Black Star News Show. A lot of people that don't really understand what is going on, they hear all these stories about deaths at Rikers Island. They hear low morale amongst the correction officers. You actually have a real life experience that I think is worth sharing with our listeners. You've been with correction for 15 years. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
At 2018, you sustained a serious injury when you were attacked by an inmate. Eventually,
that's correct.
You had surgery on your right hand. You sustained nerve damage. You tried to come back to work, light duty, without any more interaction with inmates. But the pain was excruciating. It was not getting better. So you went out on injury. And then you filed your papers for three-quarters disability. And then since January, you've been visited in what amounts to clear abuse of power and harassment. You've told us that you've been visited 28 times at home. And you've told us on average, based on your conversation with other officers who are injured and recovering at home, they've been visited three or four times. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Now, I don't want to tell all of your story for our listeners. I want you to tell us what happened during the first visit when a Captain Ferdinand Torres came to visit you at home to verify that you were indeed home, recovering from your injury that you sustained from that attack. Please tell listeners what happened. I believe that was January 17, 2020. Is that correct? Or 2021?
Yes. 2021.
Okay, please go ahead. What happened?
During that particular time, I kept getting these blocked, restricted phone calls, repeated phone calls, one after the number. I refused to answer the phone calls because, you know, I've been avoiding, you know, telemarketers of the sort and stuff like that, and just didn't want to be bothered. But for some strange reason, the restricted phone call kept coming back and coming back and coming back. So I was forced to answer. So when I answered the phone call, I was met by Captain Torres, who stated to me that he was given a phone number. He was given a phone by HMD that doesn't display a number. So I explained to Captain Torres that, listen, there's a difference between a phone that's unable to display a number opposed to a number that's restricted. In other words, you intentionally restricted your number. So I explained to him and began to advise him that, listen, in the near future, if you should call me from block numbers, restricted numbers of the sort, that I'm not going to answer the call. His response was, we'll see about that. Several minutes later, he comes pounding on the door. Well, I didn't know it was him. He comes pounding on the door, sending my daughter and my nephew scurrying to the back room. I swung the door open. You know, I stared him down, you know, and I'm looking at him like, yo, like, what is your problem? You know, I asked him how he got in the building. He told me that the door was open. So I began to explain to him, and I says, well, listen here. I says, if you want to continue to bypass the security system provided for non-residents and think you're going to make your way up to my place of residence looking for something, I says, I'm not going to answer the door because, one, I live alone and I'm not expecting any visitors.
All right, so pause there for a second. First of all, I'll pause there for a second. I want listeners to think about this. This is an officer who is evading security in order to enter a building. I didn't want that to go unnoticed, but please continue.
So I signed the clipboard and I sent him about his way. I was upset about the fact that my daughter was up, you know, he startled the kids, you know, and, you know, I like really had a problem with that. Like, you know, like, where does this guy get off thinking that he can just walk through the building without going through, you know, the proper protocols that management sets forth for people who don't live in the complex?
Did you inform anybody at that point? Did you complain to anybody at that point?
Yes. I end up calling the union delegate. I wrote something up. I sent it via text through the union delegate to the commanding officer of HMD. I have as of yet till this day heard anything about that.
Amazing. Now tell listeners what happened during the second visit, which I believe was May 8th. Is that correct?
May 8th, approximately somewhere around, I want to say around 11-ish, somewhere around there. This was one of my days where I was just so much in pain. I had just laid down. I really didn't want to be bothered, you know, with anything going on. And I was unable to utilize my hand in the fashion that I wanted to. So I just laid down. So I started hearing these light tapping sounds on the door. Well, not so much on the door, but I didn't know where they was coming from. I just took for a quick instance that maybe there had been the wind blowing the blinds and it was tapping along the frame. So I got up and I investigated. I heard the tapping sounds again. So I look underneath the door and I see a shadow. So when I see the shadow, I open the door. Captain Torres is standing there. So he says to me, yeah, good afternoon, you know, Captain Torres. I said, I know who you are. I says, just like you know who I am. He questioned me. He says, shield and ID. I presented my shield and ID, and then I questioned him. I says, listen, Cap, how did you get in the building? He explained to me once again that the door was open, which is a total lie.
So he's literally he's literally breaking and entering, but please go ahead, continue.
Right. So I began to explain to him again. I says, listen, if you think that you're going to keep coming here disrespecting the policies and procedures set forth by management and bypassing the security systems, you're dead wrong. I said, you need to show some respect. He tells me, he says, listen, sign the clipboard. I says, listen, Cap, I says, I'm in a lot of pain today. I don't have time to sit up here and sign the clipboard because, you know, that being said, I stepped back and I cordially closed the door and I went about my business. About 30 seconds later, he slid a white paper in color underneath my door. And when I looked at it, I saw that it was a not at home notice. So I said, well, why would this guy sit up here and slap this underneath my door when we just had a verbal altercation in the threshold of my door? There was witnesses. The other neighbors saw what was going on, can put me at my house. To my understanding, there was there's video footage placing me in my home as well. Once again, I had put on some clothes. I caught up with him downstairs and I says, excuse me, sir. I says, why would you slide this paper, this not at home notice underneath my door? I immediately told him, yo, every time you've come to my house, you have been unprofessional, you have been disrespectful, and you need to leave the premises. He did so, but he yelled back when he got to the door that he would be back.
Yes. So, listeners, our guest Dixon was being very literal in repeating the statement that was said to him by the captain. We apologize for that language. We don't use that type of language on radio, of course. And our guest was not aware of that. So I apologize on his behalf as well. We will continue with this story after a brief station break. This is our midpoint break. Things went downhill after that for Officer Dixon. But we'll hear the rest of it after this brief break. Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi, and today our guest is a Department of Correction Officer, 15-year veteran, Sean Dixon, who is narrating some of the challenges that he's been facing, not from inmates. He suffered a serious injury from an inmate, but his ordeal and tormentors lately have actually been fellow senior officers at the Department of Correction. And that's what we've been discussing. Before we continue with this second half hour, listeners, once again, I would like to remind you of our ongoing Tower Fund campaign, which is to enable us to pay off our bills for the transmitters, which are housed at the tower at 4 Times Square. I urge you to pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2950, or you can go to Tower Fund, that's TOWERFUND .WBAI.org. Thank you. And now back to our guest, Officer Sean Dixon. Now, let's pick it up from the visit of May the 18th, 10 days after that incident where he came by and ended up issuing you with a not at home slip, even though he spoke with you, you had an argument, and he falsely issued that form. That was not the end of it. 10 days later, something happened. Tell listeners.
Well, 10 days later, I was awoken by large banging on the door, a loud thumping on the door. I got up, immediately investigated, and when I opened my door, I was met by a fleet of officers stagnated outside my door as if they was ready to breach. Basically, it was two Mount Vernon police officers, two officers from Department of Corrections Investigations, and approximately six officers from the Department of Investigations.
So you're talking almost 10 then. Were they all armed also?
Yes. Armed to the teeth. Bulletproof vests, firearms, radios blaring in the background, and just looking like they was ready to take me out.
Like a hostage situation.
Exactly. You know,
and what was
the first thing that came?
What was the explanation? You tell us.
Their explanation was that, they never gave me an explanation. They just said that they was there to confiscate my firearms and serve me with departmental paperwork. My response to that was, well, it takes this many of you guys to do such, you know? And, you know, in my mind at the time, I'm thinking these guys are there to kill me. You know, I'm thinking, you know how this would play out had my daughter been there, you know, because it definitely would have been a different situation that, you know, you guys are showing up the way you're showing up. Like I'm a fugitive of the law. You know, like I'm an inmate, like you guys are conducting a warrant on somebody or, you know, parole, probation, any of the sort. They came in, one officer that I knew from Mount Vernon, he came in. I felt a little bit comfortable with him. He kind of like de-escalated the situation. I knew another guy from investigations. They was allowed in to administer their disservice to me by serving me the departmental paperwork and confiscating my firearms.
What did the paper say?
The paperwork said, well, it was numerous paperwork. It was numerous paperwork, but it wasn't all the paperwork that was supposed to have been given to me. So one of the paperworks was just a receipt saying that they confiscated my firearms. Another piece of paper said that these are the charges that I was brought up on, anywhere from disrespecting a supervisor, not adhering to orders, and they went as far as even charging me with not supervising inmates, and I had already been out of work for approximately 15 months already. So it was
for not supervising inmates,
yes.
And they know that you've been
right
at home recovering for more than a year.
Absolutely. So it was
you have a copy of this in writing, right?
Yes, I have everything.
Somebody signed this? Somebody put their name on this and signed it?
Yes, they absolutely did.
Okay,
yes,
so listen.
Let's
pause for a second. I mean, I hope somebody at DOC is listening, because I did get in touch with them. I did tell them that we're doing this interview. I did invite them. I did send a copy of the invitation we extended to them to the mayor's office as well. And I did get a confirmation email from a spokesperson named Patrick Rocio. I hope I'm pronouncing the names correctly. And it just had this note confirming receipt. They did not respond to any of the questions. They did not respond to our invitation for them to be on this show as well, to respond to these serious allegations that you are making. Because listening to this, a listener might say, why didn't they just call him in if they had a problem? Why didn't they just call Dixon in if they had a problem? It's hard to explain that you presented any immediate danger after that May 8 incident with Torres, Ferdinand Torres. Why would they have waited 10 days if you presented some sort of danger? So this sounds like retaliation. Basically, the guy got pissed off that you had that, you exchanged the words, and then this appears to be abuse of power. But I want you
absolutely
to continue.
Shortly after that, you know, I made a couple of phone calls. I just began getting my story correct, you know, just letting everybody know that this is what happened. One of the papers told me that I had to report to the investigations unit at headquarters to give my side of the story. I questioned the validity of it, and I says, well, listen, how do you guys sit up here, hit me with all these charges, confiscate my firearms without hearing one side of the story? So you're telling me it's okay to shoot first and then ask questions later? They told me, listen, that I had to just report. So the 26th came, I made my point, you know, they heard my side of the story. And from that day on has just been nothing but peer harassment. You know, these guys, they come to my house so much, or they have come so much, I might as well rent a room out to one of these guys, you know, because this is crazy.
In fact, you said on one occasion, they came twice within a 1 hour period. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Now, here's the thing, because you hear a lot of the stories, you hear that there's a manpower shortage at Rikers Island, the Department of Correction, and yet they have the time to send folks two times within a 1 hour period to you. And as you said, yes, since that incident, you've been visited 28 times. Is that correct?
That's correct. As of today, 28 times. Yes.
And you said you've been documenting and recording all these visits, correct?
Every last one of them. Every last one of them. Names. I got phone numbers. I got names. I got everything. Who's ever came to my front door?
And when was the last visit?
My last visit was, I want to say it was on a weekend, I believe. It was November 20th at 10:50 hours in the morning.
All right. So I hope other corrections officers are also listening to your story. And if there any one of you out there that is experiencing this type of what sounds to be clearly abuse of power, get in touch with us. My email is malimadi@gmail.com. That's MALLIMAD, like David, I@gmail.com, because it's very hard to believe that this is just happening to one individual. We've done many stories in the past. We did a story of a correction officer many years ago named Donald Winkfield, who sustained a serious foot injury at Rikers Island, literally broke his foot. He was in a full body cast, and they ordered him to report back to work, which of course was impossible. And they ended up so-called firing him. He's still waiting to report to duty. And it's been way over decades now. So this type of occurrences don't seem to be unusual at DOC. Listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And I'm your host, Milton Alimadi of Black Star News Show. As we wind toward the end of our show, I want to remind you once again, listeners, we can only bring you these type of discussions with your support. And that is why I urge you once again to please support our tower fund so we're able to pay for our transmitters. And you can do so by going to Tower Fund, and that's TOWERFUND.WBAI.org. Or you can dial 212-209-2950. And I have evidence that there are people that actually do listen to this show, because I just got a call from Donald Wingfield, the correction officer whose name I just mentioned. And he's just called me on the other line. Donald, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Donald, so based on what you've heard so far, what do you have to say? Donald, can you hear me? Donald Wingfield, can you hear me? I think we lost Donald, but Donald was a correction officer who was similarly abused, ended up being fired, and he's still waiting to collect his permanent disability and back pay, which could amount to, who knows, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But anyway, maybe he'll try to call us again. In the meantime, let's come back to you, Officer Sean Dixon. Your problems did not stop with that home invasion. This is what I call it. Let's just speak plain language, plain and simple. Abuse of power. They just got pissed off at you and flexed muscles. But that was not the end of it. What happened after that?
Well, shortly after that, as you know, the course of time went out, I had already put in for a 3/4 disability, which seems to me that it's been far more delayed, and the excuse is it's COVID related. You know, I've seen guys, I've heard guys, you know, get hurt on a job and similarity put into it and put in for it, and they haven't waited nowhere longer than a year.
You've waited, you know, more than a year.
Yes.
But something else happened in the meantime. Tell listeners the letter they sent you. What does this letter say?
I was sent a letter in the I was sent in the mail a letter proposing medical separation / termination. And as a result, basically, from what I gather is that I basically ran up my sick leave time, which I'm not sick, which I don't understand. How do you have me adhere to a sick leave policy when I'm not sick? You're injured,
so there should be no time limit in terms of your recovery. You're injured, and you have all the medical documentation, and that's why you're not able to work. But there, I saw that letter as well. The letter basically is saying, if you don't show up to work by January the 3rd, you're going to be fired. That's what the letter in plain language says. And I hope that the people at Correction are listening to this. I hope the commissioner of the Correction Department, Vincent Schiraldi, is listening to this. I hope somebody at outgoing Mayor de Blasio's office is listening to this. I hope somebody from incoming Mayor Eric Adams' office is listening to this. And now you can understand why we hear all these stories about morale being low amongst corrections officers. I think I have Donald back on the line. Donald Wingfield, are you back on the line?
Yes, I am.
We only have a few minutes left. So Donald, say something based on what you've heard so far. Donald is a correction officer technically, because he was never properly terminated.
Cast, but I'm listening to this story here, and I see the department has not changed. My case has been over 23 years since I've been trying to get the name of a doctor that returned me back to administrative duty while I was in that cast.
So in other words, they got a doctor to sign that you were fit to come back to work when in fact you were still in a full body cast. Is that it?
That's the only way I could be marked A, absent without leave, as if I was in some type of administrative post.
And then they use that charade to basically terminate you. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And how many years ago was that?
23 years.
So you're technically owed 23 years of salary. Is that it?
Exactly. Right now, I'm just collecting my medical. I've been collecting since day one, which I had to fight for and receive that like 2 years after I was injured.
So when you hear Officer Sean Dixon's story, you know, what thoughts are coming to your mind and what comment do you have?
The department has not changed one bit. What he's saying, I'm just listening to what he's saying. And first of all, the absent, that captain worked for the absent control unit. That captain should never been at his home. That's number one. He was injured in the line of duty. See, there's a lot of cases out there, and I speak to a lot of officers who say the same thing, but they're afraid to come forward because you see what type of action they do. They run up to these guys like they're inmates and run into their homes. They have never did that to me, but they know
Donald, to cut you off for 1 second, that captain came from Department of Investigation. He was TDY'd there.
Okay.
So, but when they come knocking on your door, they say they're from HMD. So there's a clear and precise ill will to conspire against officers. And that's what the problem is. You know, instead of just conducting yourself like a normal human being, they automatically come looking for things that aren't there. And this is when they run into problems. And the minute you say something, they bring you up with all these manufactured and fabricated charges. And now you're in a situation like I'm in, you know.
And Donald, when you heard about all these officers basically raiding this officer's home, what is your reaction to that?
That's totally off the charts. I mean, that's abusive. I mean, who signed off on that and who ordered that to happen? Because all they had to do was order him into HMD, and that was it.
If they had a problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so we're running out of time. So I want you, Officer Dixon, first of all, I want you, before you, I want Donald to have some final words. Donald, when you hear this story, what message do you have for other correction officers out there, number one? And what message do you have to the commissioner of the Department of Correction, the commissioner is actually Vincent Schiraldi, yes.
Right. Follow your own rules and regulations, which the department is not doing. And just like just stated, like I've been saying for 23 years, I was not sick. I was injured in the line of duty. So you can't put me under the same umbrella as someone who's had called in on sick leave. I was never on sick leave. And that's the way they operate in that department.
All right. And Officer Dixon, some final words? And, you know, we'll definitely have you guys back on this show again. And I'm sure other officers may get in touch and we'll have them on as well. But Dixon, some final words.
Yeah, well, my final words is as such. Basically, I'm going to continue with the fight. You know, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing and, you know, trying to recuperate and heal up. And in conclusion, to my understanding, that inmate was never charged. Is probably somewhere out in New York somewhere running around, and I'm home serving that inmate sentence.
And you're the one whose home is being raided.
Right.
I mean, you can't even make this up if this was a script. Well, officers, both of you, thank you for bringing your stories to our listeners, WBAI. Listeners, please remember to go to blackstarnews.com as well. You can follow me at Ali Mahdi. And remain positive, stay safe, and remain Pan-African. See you soon. Thank you. Thank you to our guests.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Massive and expensive equipment marks the professional radio station. But in the amateur field, radio parts often include pieces of assorted junk, ingeniously assembled by operators, and lots of strange radio parts, such as whiskey glasses mounted on a cake tin. Ma's funnel actually becomes a loudspeaker, and her sieve, part of a microphone. Winding a coil becomes comparatively simple when using the family egg beater. All amateurs are heroes of the air at heart and dream of a chance to serve humanity whenever a calamity occurs. And speaking of calamities, well...
Hey there, all our beloved radio listeners. Yes, we're in a bit of a calamity right now, with an urgent need here at WBAI to pay our radio tower back rent or cease to broadcast. And here at this radio station, we'd like to continue to serve humanity, but without having to resort to those egg beaters and cake tins in an emergency. So please donate whatever you can by calling in to 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or visiting the Donate to Our Tower Fund at the top of the BAI website page. And Arts Express thanks you.
The next Community Advisory Board meeting will be held on Sunday, December 19th, 2021 at 1 p.m. The meeting will be by teleconference. The call-in number is 623-600-3766. And the meeting ID number is 963-003. Everyone is welcome to call in and join in the meeting. Again, the call-in number is 623-600-3766, and the meeting ID is 963-003.
This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit proudly announces the Community Cares Listening Line for Black first responders and essential workers. We're here and we're listening. The Community Cares Listening Line is a free, confidential service staffed with responsive volunteers who can provide emotional support and share information with our callers. If you're feeling anxious, afraid, distressed, burdened, or overwhelmed by a range of emotions, please call the Community Cares Listening Line at 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117.
Listening to WBAI New York 99.5.